You were glad to leave the Senate, right?
Yes, I was. I never felt I fit in the Senate. The Senate is a place to go and talk. I live before you can get something done.
Then you came back to be governor again.
Yes.
George Bush Sr., you had a good relationship with him.
Yes.
Can you describe him?
Well, I'll tell you about the circumstance, and maybe this is the best way to describe him. He was a member of a thing called the Alibi Club, which had a clubhouse downtown in Washington in one of those kind of old brownstone buildings. George would invite in an intellectual giant or authority on some issue and invite a dozen or 15 guests to smoked oyster dinner, and you eat smoked oysters and spinach salad. And then this person would talk a little while to set out an issue, and then you'd have an exchange of opinions about what was being done. George invited me to those meetings different times. It was the most intellectual event of my time in Washington. But I think it tells you about George Bush. He was just exactly the opposite of Nixon. He was interested in domestic issues and very interested in getting to the bottom of what was wrong with the country. He had had the Federal Reserve sometimes, and he had university presidents. He had people from Wall Street. I had great admiration for George Bush.
Did you become a campaign manager for his presidential run?
I was a state manager.
Yeah, state. Must have been state. All right, we need to talk about House Bill 1017, the education funding bill. This was in 1990. It was to increase funding, make kindergarten compulsory, smaller classes, teacher incentive pay, teacher tenure reform. That all sounds real good, but you had a fight on your hands with that bill.
Yes, we did. You mentioned it happened in 1990. It started in 1989. I realized that the legislature was going to not come back into session until January. Be before an election. I didn't think there was any way to get a legislature to reform education during an election year. So absolutely on my own, without consultation with the Secretary of Education or the OEA or anybody else, I called my cabinet together and told them we were going to have a special session to deal strictly and only with education, and that we'd have to have a proposal to lay on the table when they called it and certainly get some together. And they did it overnight, practically. Our bill was not a serious bill. It was a vehicle to get the wheels started to turn. And I called a special session, and the legislature were furious. They'd just been through a session. They didn't want to be hung up for months in another one. And I couldn't even get anybody to introduce our bill. We finally got a man from Tulsa, Bill. He was a good fellow. He introduced the bill. I think maybe one vote's all he got. But at the same time, Steve Lewis, unbeknownst to me, had been working on an Education Reform Act, and he introduced his bill, which gave us the vehicle we needed to consider the subject. Steve and President Pro Tem of the Senate, Bob Cullison, came to see me, and it turned out that the legislature had passed a resolution authorizing and instructing the governor and the speaker and the President Pro Tem to create an Education Study Commission. They suggested to me that we go ahead and create this commission quickly and give it the duty of developing an education reform plan. We did that. We got George Singer of Tulsa to be chairman of it, and they had hearings all over the state for several months, and they developed this package of reforms that you just read, and that became House Bill 1017. But it took 9 months from the time I called the session until they voted it. Cullison and Lewis and I agreed that there wouldn't be any bill unless it included the funding. The legislature often voted reforms and never funded them, and we were going to take a position that the reforms and the money had to come at the same time.
But because there was a required tax increase to make this happen, you had Republican opposition.
We had some Republican support, but most Republicans were opposed. At least 9 House Republicans voted for the bill, and at least 1 senator voted for it. It was tough to get it through the Senate. The concern was that the people who voted for the bill would lose the next election. The result was the opposite. The ones who were defeated were mostly the ones who voted against the bill. And I think it's important to note that the opponents of House Bill 1017 circulated a petition to have a referendum on the matter. They voted on it after 1017 had been in operation for maybe 6 months. The Daily O'Connor editorialized vigorously against the bill and against the tax increase. And yet when the vote was taken, the voters approved 1017, and it's still on the books. I think that those who feel like voters won't support a needed revenue measure are misreading the facts.
They will when they feel it's appropriate.
For a good purpose. The people are more foresighted than the politicians give them credit for being.
The signing of House Bill 1017 actually happened in Tulsa.
At the grade school where your wife was,
it was
principal.
At Marshall Elementary.
Yes. There's a very nice photograph of the signing of that bill.
That was a very impressive day, and I was there to watch you sign that.
I hope 1017 survives. It's under attack, I think, tangentially right now.